It's just more life.
more tunes for your head tap, I think is
I wonder how long could we get away with like doing an entire episode in bad Jamaican accents.
I think I'd have to do the bad Jamaican accent and you'd have to do the fake UK grime rapper.
Oh, I can't wait till we talk about KMT. Good Lord.
I can't wait till we talk about this. I've been looking forward to this week. Like, sat down and did insane notes last night.
Yeah, so I saw your tweet and I was like, which beat is he talking about? There's so many.
There's a lot to talk about.
There's a lot. All right, let's get into it.
All right.
We ready? All right, three.
More tunes. I'll get.
many things bad man don't know, right? Did I do it right?
Oh, we're both being funny and terribly disrespectful at the same time.
Apologies to all of our listeners who, you know, come from that culture. We apologize extremely. I think our perspective is from, you know, like Drake wasn't Jamaican until like 2 years ago. It's like when you do like ancestry.com
and he's like, wait a minute.
Like his great great grandfather like lived in Jamaica for like 3 months. And he's like, Bo. Oh, all my friends. Oh man, oh my God, they're all gonna be mad at me.
You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I'm your co-host, Armand Wake Up. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. But more important than that, follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle, which is at CRS Podcast. ClockRadioSpeakers.com is powered by Tumblr. You can get all 200 episodes there. We're also on Facebook. We're on Instagram. And we are on 4thDistrict.com. We are on Stitcher. We are everywhere that you get podcasts and talk about things that on the computer except SoundCloud because they're trash. And Doc's here. What's up, man?
What's going on, everybody? You can follow me on Twitter at @Doc_Beats. That's not a Z, but more important than that, follow the show at CRS Podcast, like Armand said. If at some point I just start clapping random 2002, 2003 rhythms.
You got to do the Lumi D joint.
I have a good note on that. When we get to Drake, actually, it was hilarious when it happened. I'm mourning the fact that the UConn men's team is not in the tournament, but at
Did
the very
make it?
No, but at the very least, we've, you know, got a ridiculously dominant women's basketball team. So
I'm shocked.
I went to the game on Saturday, the first round of the, here's the thing, like the weird thing about the women's tournament is if you're one of the top seeds, the first two rounds are on your home court.
Interesting.
So UConn had to face a 16 seed at home.
So what was it, like North High School or something like that?
University of Albany, which actually for them, I mean, if, you know, that's close. That's like a 2 hour drive from here. So, you know, the opportunity to go see your team in the first round when they probably don't make it often, like that's pretty big. But
Sure.
The general rule of thumb when we watch UConn women's basketball is if they're not doubled the score of the opposing team, it's getting kind of serious. Like if it's a team we're playing and we're roughly doubling their score, they're it's just not even remotely serious. If it's like 30, if it's in like the 15 to 30 range, you get a little concerned. When it's under that, people are just like, you know, joking on Twitter, but they'll be like, fire Gino being the coach, right? Which of course is ridiculous because the most successful college basketball coach ever, like at this point. You know, got to watch the UConn women completely destroy. And like, man, I don't know how much you follow women's basketball. You don't have to answer.
Yeah, all right.
So last year, they've been undefeated for a couple years in a row now. They've won 109 games in a row, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous.
Jesus.
their team last year was dominant, but they were sort of expected to be because they lost three big seniors who went 1, 2, 3 in the draft, which is crazy. And even coming back from that, they've still been undefeated. And it's fascinating to watch this team because, like every great team in any sport, they'll be sort of almost like playing with a team for a while, like sort of like that. But when they will get into these gears, and for them, it's based off defense, because I think Gino, their coach, is exploiting a tweak about the women's game in college, which is that, so men's game in college, they do 2 20-minute halves, right? And for the women's, it's 4 10-minute quarters. So he plays his starters way more than I've ever seen anybody else play his starters, because he knows they just have to go 10 minutes of game time before a break.
Mm-hmm.
So they are trapping and pressing, and against teams where there's a big talent disparity, they just can't, like, they'll go on like 25-5, 30-5 runs like it's nothing. And you're just sitting back watching, you're like, oh my God, this is not even fair. So long story short, took my grandparents to the UConn women's game, had a good time. How about you, man? What you been up to?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, are you, like, is that even exciting to watch?
In the sense of, like, it's greatness in a real true sense. Like, they are a fantastic basketball team. So, if people think that's good to watch, like, yeah, you want to watch it.
Gotcha.
You know, and...
So, is it like how back in, like, the Roman Empire days, how people would just find joy out of, you know, watching people get fed to lions and fight to death?
So imagine if there were like an NCAA tournament style thing for the NBA, and you had in round one, the Warriors were playing the Nets. Mm. At a certain level, watching the Warriors like just zip around and do what they do and just completely obliterate the Nets. Like, they're like, you don't want to watch that for like 7 games, thankfully, or even maybe 4, but like to watch that for one, you're like, okay, that's pretty impressive. Do you know what I mean? It feels like that sort of thing.
Got you.
But aside from that, you know, watching the NCAA tournament, basically rooting for Syracuse and Duke to fail at every possible opportunity. So
that's, and you're already halfway there, right?
Well, Syracuse didn't even make the tournament, and then they lost in the NIT. And then they gave Jim Boeheim a contract extension, even though he was supposed to be on his way out. So good times all around up here in Northern Connecticut.
There you go.
How about you, man? What you been watching?
Nothing. a little bit of March Madness, not a whole lot. It just so happens that every time I turn the game on, every time I turn the tournament on, Michigan's playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, because I want to get some March Madness in, I end up watching the game. So I've seen like all of Michigan's games, and I'm like, and that even happened in the Big Ten tournament. And I watched the Big Ten tournament championship. I think they play like Wisconsin or something like that.
Yep.
And I was like, dude, this is like Big Ten basketball. Big Ten men's basketball is incredibly boring. And as, you know, as big of a deal as Big Ten football is here in Ohio, basketball, not so much.
Mm.
So that's been interesting. But no, I haven't been doing much. I'm still working on music. And
I was going to say, you're in music mode right now.
I'm completely in music mode, trying to do some other stuff outside of that, trying to figure out this whole college thing, getting ready for my kids to get here for the summer. So, you know, 60 degrees today. So it's like spring is trying to fight again.
Mm.
But I know the last time we said that, it ended up being 20 degrees and everybody got sick. So I won't jump the gun now. But yeah, I got a lot going on, man. I haven't seen much. I will be making time to watch the Chappelle stand up on Netflix. I'll probably watch that as soon as we're done recording the show. Like, I have to. Do you remember? This is a testament to just how Clock Radio Speakers has always been, even before it actually was. So you used to try and get me to watch Chappelle's show all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, nah. I'll watch it one day. And then I think it might have been the, because I remember going on So and everybody ranting and raving about Charlie Murphy, True Hollywood Stories. But then I think the episode that made me watch was when Common and Kanye did the food, right?
Yeah.
And then it was a wrap after that. So 12 years later, Doc's still trying to get me to listen to stuff and watch stuff. And I'm like, I'll get to it. and I never do.
I lucked out, and that second season of Chappelle, of the Chappelle show, was my senior year in college. And of course, me being a nerd, I had an early TiVo back then.
Oh my God, TiVo.
Right. So that was, you know, nobody had, like, DVRs were not a thing. Like, TiVo was like a nerd thing. So, you know, we just, like, we would set it. Like, this is, I mean, we're going to sound really old, right? But it's not like there was YouTube where you could just rewatch stuff, you know? So,
right.
So we had a, you know, on TiVo, they were called season passes. So we had a season pass to Chappelle Show. We just rewatch it all the time. It just was a lucky sort of accident of, I had a TiVo and, you know, a lot of time in college that I guess I should have been going to class, but you know, we had Mario Kart and we had TiVo and we.
Yeah, Mario Kart, Super Mario Kart, or like Mario Kart 64 or
GameCube Mario Kart.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's the
excuse me. But yeah, man.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
I'm not gonna lie. Like, all I've been doing is for prepping for this show, low key.
So you said you were working on music, and
yeah,
for those who subscribe to your mailing list,
yeah,
they got a little something.
They got a little something.
Is that going to be made widely available?
Yes, it will.
Okay.
Probably later this week.
Okay.
I don't want to throw a date out there, but later this week, definitely.
Right.
Yeah. So what happened was, you know, I'm randomly, I think church let out, so I'm sitting there. Priest came to our service. So shout out to priest and his family. They came and I'm sitting there talking to them, and I was talking to them about, you know, just, you know, what was going on. And I had the Santorini Grease beat stuck in my head. And so, you know, I hit up the connect and I said, I wonder if I could get my hands on this beat. And lo and behold, I could. And immediately I had already wrote, because I was writing to some stuff for the album. So like the first maybe 8 to 12 bars were something that was supposed to be on the album. But as soon as I heard it, I said, yeah, I got to use that verse for this. And the rest of it, I came home, I ate some Charlie's and I got the writing, and then, you know, shout it off to Doc, and Doc's the MVP because I was very meticulous and crazy about this mix, and Doc got it right for me. So thank you, sir.
It only took 5 mixes. They were quick, though. It was quick.
Yeah, it was quick mixes. The funny part is like, normally they don't take 5.
It's a challenging beat. And actually, when we talk about Santorini Grease, I will detail the challenges of that beat in particular.
Okay. So yeah. So
I'll nerd out on that. But yeah.
Yeah, so it's called East St. Louis, Illinois, and it'll be made available this week. So make sure you subscribe to my mailing list. I'll have a better way of doing it instead of me manually doing it. I'm trying to figure out how to have a link or something like that. But in the meantime, yeah, if you want to get on the mailing list, hit me up at Armand Wake Up on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, something like that. And I'll get you at it, because that won't be the only time that happens. So
it's funny. Yeah. I realized I'm actually not even on your mailing list, which is terrible.
You don't count.
No, but like, I was like, you know, how many versions of your songs aren't, they literally are just in Dropbox for me under like mixed down 1_.
Yeah. And, I mean, but that's totally fine.
Right,
so
right.
I could care less. Like that's fine. It's for the people. Like you don't count. You're part of the process. You're not the people. You're the process.
Speaking of the process.
Yeah.
You want to talk real quick about some NBA stuff?
Yeah. So we're not going to talk about the Ball brothers and all that stuff, are we? Does that matter?
No. We definitely, I mean, this, I would say when they announce the lottery, maybe then we could, like, the order of the lottery, maybe we could start to talk about what's going on there. If not, then definitely when it's draft time, because it's a fascinating year for the draft.
Yeah.
Okay. The Ball brothers are ridiculous, but you had brought up before the show this sort of mini faux drama about NBA players sitting.
Yeah. So in today's fake outrage, people seem to be really upset about starters sitting in March and April. And there's this discussion about should the season be 82 games? And, you know, again, talk about how there's only maybe 4 or 5 competitive teams in the entire league. And what does that mean? And yada, yada. And spoiler alert, teams always sit their star players around this time. So where's the fake outrage? This has happened every year, all the time, because for the most part, most of the top seeds are somewhat solidified. And the greater concern is aside from playoff position, making sure your team is playoff ready, because, you know, I think Steph got hurt last week. KD got hurt recently. You know, you're one of your top guys goes down in March, April on a day that you're playing, you know, a 10th seed team. You're going to be kicking yourself in the foot. Can you kick yourself in the foot?
Yeah, with your other foot.
With your other foot.
The good foot.
Yeah, the good foot. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, it was two back-to-back weeks where it was the highest profile Saturday night NBA primetime game. And key players sat, so many key players that both teams decided, now we're just going to sit a bunch of people. And it's honestly, in one real way, it's like, yeah, that kind of looks bad. Also, especially when it's so last minute. Like, I think with the game involving the Cavs, like, I think they rested. People didn't even know until, like, they showed up to the arena, basically. So if you're a fan and you went on, like, StubHub or whatever, and you paid extra for that, man, that's got to hurt.
The Andersons got tickets.
But seriously, like, I mean, can you imagine, like, you know, you're in town or whatever, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to go see, you know, LeBron, do this, and da-da, and then you show up, and it's like, wait, I'm going to see Channing Frye? You know, no shit to Channing Frye. I'm just saying, like, especially if you paid, like, extra for good seats, like, that kind of hurts. So I understand some of the uproar in terms of, like, timing, and it really is just, it's more about, like, the NBA has got to figure out how to make the schedule easier. We now have so much evidence that resting players reduces injury, keeps them around longer. You know, I think they're already making moves to basically practically eliminate the preseason, really slim it down, and just stretch the 82 games throughout that. But whatever they can do to, like, make it so that this doesn't happen. I mean, they basically do this because there are, you know, three games in four nights or back-to-backs on different cities or, like, whatever the case is. That's not easy to do, you know? So
right. Absolutely.
It's one of those things where the fact that it actually was a little controversy is actually a good thing, because I think it'll get the NBA to talk about how they can fix this problem. So,
yeah.
To me, the problem is more like the schedule is just hard. It's not so much the problem is that the players are being sat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just, I guess it's one of those things where, like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's always, you know, more than ever in society, norms have been challenged. So on one hand, it's like, yeah, you're getting paid all this money, so you should still, you know, you should be able to grind for 82 games for, how long is the NBA season? 8 months?
Yeah.
Something like that. And then on the other hand, it's, you know, it's still 82 games and road trips and back-to-backs and media and press and practice and family stuff and business stuff. And it's a lot.
Yeah.
So I understand both sides, but nobody can really speak on it for sure unless you're actually in that position to actually live that life and determine, you know, what someone is and what someone isn't capable of, especially when it comes to professional sports, right?
Right.
So I don't know. I'm just ready for the playoffs. Honestly, I'm just ready. It's time.
We're like 3 weeks away, 4 weeks away.
Yeah. About mid-April.
Right.
April's when things get popping in the building. So I think that's it. Can we just jump into?
Let's get to it. Two big albums this week. Well, two big projects this week. We'll talk about labels later on. Let's start with Mr. Renzel, Mr. Rick Ross. So, new album, Rather You Than Me.
Mm-hmm.
He's had some songs out in advance this album, right? One of them was I Think She Liked Me, but what, like, Buy Back the Block, which is not on here at all.
Yeah, it isn't. And I forgot to listen to that remix. I heard good things about the remix.
Yeah, people like the remix. So,
hey, that isn't on the album. Well, that was stupid. Because I like the original version.
Yeah, not 100% sure what happened there. But Ross is sort of, that's not an unusual thing for Ross, right? Ross, not quite on, say, like a Nas level, but, like, Ross has a decent number of songs that you might consider unreleased. You could put together a really, actually, you know, an official, like, Rick Ross lost tapes would be kind of serious.
Yes, it would.
Everything a Dope Boy Ever Wanted.
Yep. Another one, Fountain Blue.
Veterans Day, of course.
Veterans Day, the Roland remix with Gunplay and Wayne. I mean, even some of his mixtape stuff. So, like, Even Deeper and Knife Fight with Cool G Rap and, like, Yeah.
If he ever decides he needs a quick streaming album to satisfy some deal with Epic, you know.
A Lost Tapes would absolutely work for him.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because some of those albums don't have, or some of those songs don't have any anything CDQ available.
Right.
So that could totally work.
Which is, as is always on Clock Radio Speakers, we're really just giving away ideas here.
That's what we do.
So I Think She Liked Me is, I guess, technically the lead single.
It is.
Not really what I would consider a normal lead single. Is that fair?
Yeah, but I mean, that's one of the bigger questions about this project is, what on here says this should be a single?
Well, there is one song that is that I'm actually just really impressed wasn't leaked ahead of time. And we'll get to that pretty early on.
I'm curious to know about that. I don't know if it's Captain Obvious, but
yeah, I think it might be Captain Obvious, just because I think it's a hard track for an artist to resist leaking.
Yeah, I actually I actually respect it.
I do too.
Leaking the way that it did.
I do too. So we should talk about that. But the reception for I Think She Liked Me was, I think people liked the sample.
I think people liked the song.
I think people liked it. It wasn't like, oh my goodness, like we got to pay attention to Ross.
Nah, and I don't think Ross will ever get that again unless he does something absolutely drastic.
Mm.
It's amazing the response that he got for what he did, considering the type of artist that he is, or that people want, and also that people want him to be, and also the type of artist that he was chasing. So, yeah.
Okay. So is there anything else? I mean, the last album, he put out both Black Market and Black Dollar. Is that right?
Yeah.
One mixtape, one an album at the end of 2015.
Yeah.
Was there anything else out at the top of at the early part of this year?
He had that purple Lamborghini record on the Suicide Squad soundtrack,
which actually kind of did okay.
Yeah, it did. It was really, really loud. but yeah, that's exactly it. It did pretty well. I mean, for a soundtrack song, that's non-existent nowadays, you know.
Yeah.
Soundtrack singles used to be huge. You know, R. Kelly, I Believe I Can Fly.
I mean, the 90s are full of classic soundtracks, so.
Seal, Fly Like This. Y'all, I'm all over the place. Kick your foot in the foot, and now call in Seal.
Oh, boy.
So let's get into it. You want to go? Let's go track by track.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay. So track one, Apple of My Eye, featuring Rafael Sadiq, produced by Major Nine, who I've never heard of.
I haven't either.
How do you feel about this song?
This was a slow burner for me.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, I was like, why is this the intro?
Mm.
Like, it was all right. And I think I don't even want to call it a problem, but it's a very interesting discussion about this project is the sequencing. I think the sequencing doesn't do some of these songs favors. And I think it also helps some of the songs tremendously. And originally, I was like, I don't know about the intro on this. This should have been a little later down the line. This could have been in another batch of songs. But more recently, it totally works as the intro. And I like it a lot. It's dope.
Yeah, I think it's fine as an opener. It's a good beat. I like that sax sample a lot. I think Ross, you know, on these types of beats, it's funny. We all love the flow, but he really just slips into it. The sort of, you know, Ross, that sort of trademark Ross flow over this, almost to the point where sometimes I'm like, you know, could you do something a little different? But I don't know. When he's in that flow, I think there's like a B grade and then there's like an A grade.
Mm-hmm.
Apple of My Eye is like, that's like a B grade. Like Ross is sort of like, he's not like all the way in on this song, if that makes sense. But it's a good song. It's fine. It's a good opener. Rafael Sadiq is okay on this. Sticks out a little bit, but not the end of the world.
He's a little too long.
Yeah, yeah. At first I was like, oh, okay, right. And then he gets his own little part and I was like, no.
Yeah, he should have had a hook and a bridge, but he got a hook, a bridge, and a verse.
Right, but that's because Ross is from in a sense, an older generation of rapper, even though I don't know if we really think of him that way. But, you know, like this is a 13-track album and a lot of these songs are 4.5 to 5+ minutes long, which is exactly the opposite of how everybody else is approaching albums now.
Yep.
So, you know, some of these songs have a lot of padding.
Yep. I agree. I agree. But yeah, this song. But let me talk from the MC perspective.
Yes, please do.
Because we've talked about this. We talked about this on Black Dollar where you talked about his flow getting a little repetitive. For me, it doesn't matter because Ross is rapping his behind off. Like, lyrically, It's, I don't, Ross is like, I think he's like 41 or something like that. I don't know if it, it kind of started around the time of Hood Billionaire, Mastermind Hood Billionaire. His content began to change and get a little more reflective and a little more weighty. And this album is full of really weighty perspective, and I can appreciate it. And he's presenting that weighty perspective in a very lyrical way. So to me, the flow don't matter. The flow does matter because some of these pockets he hits.
Yeah, some
on,
of the,
on a, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you're right. There are some pockets where you're like, oh, right.
Yeah, Ross is hitting some pockets on this project, but the content and then just the even the appearance of the lyricism is doing him a lot of favors. Like he's killing this album.
So let's talk about Santorini, Greece, produced by Bink. I think we all know how you feel about this beat.
This might be the best beat of 2017 so far.
I don't even know. This is, first of all, this isn't even the best beat on the album.
I'm curious because there's some amazing beats on here. So I won't even argue with you about that.
I have a little bit of beef with some of this beat. That high end on that sample is so sharp. It's why it was so hard to mix your freestyle. I like the beats though, but I hear that and I'm like, oh, it's just like, it cuts like just the smallest bit. And I'm like, just shave that off a little bit. You know, it's a dope beat. Ross is in classic Ross mode here.
Mm-hmm.
A cool little switch on the last verse as well. I like that. But this song's a little long. It's a little long. It's 5.5 minutes.
There's one song in particular that I like, and it's just unnecessarily long.
But this is a dope record.
Yes. This does it for me. This record is stupid.
Right. Because like Ross doesn't really work with Justice League anymore, apparently. But if Bink is going to pick up the slack, like I'm actually more than okay making that exchange.
Yeah.
I'd like to see a world where it was more like, you know, in the most shameless, like I want to be like Jay-Z way. Like I kind of want him to just do like a Blueprint style album.
Yes. I mean, the funny part is
that's his destiny.
The way that this album is being received, like this, it's almost like this is his blueprint.
Let's not get crazy.
No. What I mean by that is it's one universal sound aside from a track or two. The content changes. So listen, we know what Blueprint did because we're reflecting on it retrospectively.
Right.
But at the time, Blueprint was a sharp turn from what was going on. Like there were now those of us who were nerding out, you had your Supreme clientele. And I mean, even Dynasty was kind of showing that's a different sound was coming, but Blueprint was a very sharp turn sonically in hip hop. It led the charge. So and Jay was rapping different. I mean, and people hated Jay's rhymes on that album initially. But
I bounce up like round ball.
Yeah, pack heat like the oven door. I get it. So that's what I mean when I say people are treating this like this is Ross's blueprint. Like this is a sharp turn. Mm. Where that turn is going, I'm not sure.
Yeah. This is an album that is really full of like, I don't know. To me, this is more of a collection of Ross songs than it feels like an album.
Interesting. This fit. Sounds like an album to me.
But let's talk about Idols Become Rivals featuring Chris Rock, produced by Black Metaphor. So first off, this Chris Rock intro is too long.
First of all the Chris Rock intros are unnecessary, number one.
The second one is way better.
No, here's the problem. These Chris Rock intros should have been on the outro because what they would have done is they would have broken up.
Sure.
Because having Idols Become Rivals, then the Chris Rock skit, and then Trap, like that would have sort of prepared you for the sharp turn.
That's right.
Sonically.
Right. It marks. We finished this section of the album.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. So I think, and let me look at the track listing. I believe that the skit before Idol or the skit before Powers That Be is another switch. No, well, I mean, I think
she liked me. Yeah,
but I mean, the skit can't go there. That's the single, so that kind of doesn't make sense. But anyway, yeah, Idols Become Rivals. Yeah, skit's unnecessary, but let's get into the song, man.
First of all, classic sample.
Yes.
You know, Black Metaphor, he's not doing a whole lot different with it. There's some added instrumentation. It's fine. The beat works. It's fine. No problem with the beat. But this is a This is an astonishing record.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
This is one of, if not the first, it's certainly, to my memory, the most effective "I'm disappointed in you" diss record that I've ever heard.
Yes. Ross doesn't even sound mad. He sounds like a concerned father.
Right. Birdman gets it in every possible way, and it was so unexpected.
Yeah. Well, yes and no.
Like this?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm not surprised that Ross dissed Birdman because he was dissing him on Black Dollar and he was kind of talking about him in the media. So you could kind of feel the momentum coming. But for that to become this was, yes, unexpected.
He was really disappointed that Cash Money didn't own those cars.
Yep.
Like, but so many lines here hit hard. Like,
yeah,
hit harder than anything to me than anything from the Nicki and Remy stuff.
1,000%. This is a much better and effective diss record than Sheether or No Frauds or another one.
Is this better? I mean, this is more effective than, maybe more effective than Back to Back?
No.
You don't think so?
Nah. The reason why Back to Back was more effective was because Meek was like the guy.
Also, Back to Back really works. Some of the key parts of Back to Back work because Drake is using Meek's own sort of thing against him. It's a counterpunch, right? It's like, you know, is this a world tour or your girl's tour? Is still such a ridiculously effective line, even though it's simplistic, because it cuts to the heart of what of sort of Meek's lack of security about where he is in hip hop.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, for me, I mean, lines that unexpectedly really work, like the Manny Fresh line. I was just like, oh, Manny Fresh.
Yeah. What does that mean? Is Manny Fresh still signed to Cash Money, or is there like a reconciliation with the Big Timers or something? What was that?
Trying to be, but it, you know, nothing ever really happened. The BG line is, it's like almost like a throwaway, but it's still so effective.
Yeah, he just in passing says, knew you would never go see BG. Like, dang.
Right. You know, the demons for, you know, using royalty money to buy Scott Storch's house, which has demons. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah. That line did it for me.
And we haven't talked about Wayne, who is like, man.
Thank you.
Right. I mean, between that and, you know, him doing little outros on More Life, all of a sudden it's like, you know, ironically, now would be a great time for Birdman to approve some Carter Five stuff to come out, right?
And now it's no, but now on the contrary, just because rappers are stubborn, it's almost like I've carried this position for this long, now I have to stick to my guns.
Right.
Because nobody's going to make me move off my post. I'm a boss, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I mean, the, you know, the lines comparing him to a priest.
Catholic church thing was crazy.
The part about Khaled, we haven't even, oh.
Yeah, the whole rant at the end about Khaled was really bad. Yep.
But yeah, it's just like, you know, $500 million and people are starving. Like, you just hear it in Ross's voice. Like, it's personal.
What do you say? Like, you used to, you said you did it for motivation and our drive, but we're in our pockets before we count the five or something like that. Like, that's, yeah. This record is extremely effective. It does Ross a lot of favors, and it was just executed well overall.
And Birdman is an interesting target because, like, what's Birdman? I mean, in terms of like keeping it music, like, what possible response could Birdman have to this?
I don't think anybody's expecting Birdman to respond. And he did respond, but he basically tried to brush it off and say, you know, we're not concerned about that. You know, that's, you know, we ain't on that. Blah, 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 blah.
The best thing Birdman could really do is shut up for like 2 months, 3 months, and then just have a single that works. And then that, like, literally act like it doesn't happen because there's no response to this. And that's the amazing thing. Like, it's not like people are like, it's not like anybody is even trying to defend Birdman at all here.
At all. I think that you wait for 2 months and then you go ahead and green light Carter Five. Because then it looks like you did it.
I wanted to do it. You didn't make me.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. And I think that's why that will work. At this point, you got to put it out. Like, nobody wants Carter Five. Nobody's saying free C5 except for Lil Wayne.
And if you're really smart, you have Ross be on the first single.
That would be hilarious.
The whole cycle of stories right now, you can just see the whole, oh, is this, you know, are they sticking the, you know, finger in the eye of Birdman? Oh no, Birdman playing it like it, you know, it's out of here.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say about Idols Become Rivals?
Nah, just overall really, really dope track.
Yeah. I've listened to that song a bunch of times. I'm still like the first time I heard it, my jaw dropped.
Yeah. Yep. Good positioning on this album too.
Yeah,
very. This album starts off like, yeah, we're going there.
Well, it's also pretty purposeful, right? Because Trap is clearly going to be a single. And you typically want to put really high impact records at numbers 3 and 4 in your track listing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really old school like album sequencing thing. Not a surprise that Idols Become Rivals, which in the old days probably would have been like the street single to build buzz for the album. And then Trap would be, you know what I mean? Like you could see a world where that's how they approach the rollout to this album. So I'm not surprised that those are 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Trap featuring Thugga, Wale, produced by Young Coke, which I mean, let me just say this. This song is exactly what you'd expect.
Yeah.
The beat, I think is better to me on the verses than on the hook. But to me, we're at the stage in Ross's career where if he's going to do like trap Ross, it's got to be like top-notch trap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's not what this is.
Agreed.
And so I'm just like, eh.
Yeah. You start off with this whole stretch of records is what I was talking about that sequencing does no favors to. You start off on such a high note with the first three records. I don't want to hear any trap. I've much like the other album we're going to talk about, this section of records are songs that I've heard Ross do better before. I've heard better trap records from Ross.
I would actually, that's exactly how I would describe Dead Presidents, which is Ross keeps trying to remake BMF.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's produced by B-Billionaire with Future, Jeezy, and Yo Gotti. Sadly, despite, you know, our hypothetical jokes on last week's show where we were like, maybe this will have a Jay-Z sample. And then we started talking about a trap, trap samples for Reasonable Doubt. Sadly, I don't ever need to hear the song again.
Yeah.
Is there anything redeeming about this?
Nope.
Okay. And number 6, I'm just going to say it's the song with Gucci Mane. I'm not even going to say the title.
Yeah.
Because we try to keep it family on Clock Radio Speakers.
We do. And this is also the most unnecessary song of 2017.
Produced by B-Billionaire. The beat is meh. The hook is just dumb.
Yeah.
The only thing on here that's redeeming is Gucci's flow is really good on here. He's kind of in a little pop. I like where Gucci's at right now, actually. This beat is not good enough for me to really come back to it, but it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm totally good off this record.
The less we say about those three tracks, the better.
Yep, pretty much.
So now we get to the first single, I Think She Liked Me, featuring Ty Dolla, produced by C. Gutta.
Yep.
Dope. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, dope sample, good beat. I'm not really in love with Ty Dolla's hook, but it's not terrible. This song is cool. Maybe a little bit better than cool. It's decent to me.
I like it. It's a good song. I think this is a record that sequencing helps.
Oh, interesting. Because it's right after that best record.
It's like, please get away from this ASAP. Take me back to the Ross I heard 20 minutes ago. And, you know, it was funny because I was talking with O-Sharp, friend of the show, about this project. And we played it in the barbershop. And the response from people was like immediately like, ugh, who is this, Ross? Like his reputation is at a place where people aren't even wanting to give him a shot.
Interesting.
Where like it's these instances where like social media versus like, you know, I don't even call it outside in the real world, because I think, you know, those two areas blend and separate, you know, per situation. But there's a whole generation of people who cannot get past the fact that Ross is a CEO, or, you know, he was fake and he lived his life and yada yada. And then also there's people who were tired of him trying to remake BMF. And I feel like these three collections of singles, like, or those three songs, like, just fortified that, because when the first three songs were on, people were like, who is this, Ross? Like, oh, really? And then when the four records came out, I was like, all right. And it took too long to get back to that other sound, that elegant sound. And, you know, the album didn't make it through a full rotation before they turned it off and put on something else in the shop. So I said to say, if we got rid of one of those, if we have to keep two of those records, I get it. We could have really got rid of the Gucci Mane record, is so unnecessary. But I think She Like Me is done many favors for its positioning on the sequencing. So, yeah.
So let's talk about Powers That Be featuring Nasir Jones, produced by SAP.
Yeah.
With the Chris Rock intro.
Yeah.
How you feel about this song?
I don't like this song the way everybody else does.
Yeah. The beat is fine. But to me, and you know, I don't always agree with this, but you've pointed this out that rappers do this on occasion. I think this is a good example. The purpose of this beat is to try to get Ross and Nas into a particular pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And Ross at the top of the second verse is completely ridiculously effortless, and it's disgusting.
Yeah.
Nas even tries to really dip at the start of his verse, really tries to dip into like that 97, 98 Nas flow for a minute.
A little bit of Escobar on there.
Little bit. Yep. But then he just settles into,
yeah.
You know? So this is okay. Could have been better. High expectations for these two.
Here's one thing I noticed about this album or about this song.
Yeah.
Ross, I remember when Jay Gibbons, friend of the show, when he was on the review Black Dollar, I originally said that Nas like got Ross on that record, and both of y'all were like, no, not at all. I later recanted on that statement and agree with you guys. Ross is not letting Nas or anybody else outshine him on a record in 2017. Like you can hear the oh no in Ross's flow. Ross is like, I'm going for broke on this one.
Mm.
Again, just one, he hits that pocket.
Yeah.
And when he hits that pocket, it's like there's really nothing you can do. It's like when you get the game breaker on NBA Street. Like you just can't defend it. Right. You just have to hope that like you block it. You just time the block correctly. And 9 times out of 10, unless you absolutely obsess over the game like I did, you're not gonna time it. So yeah.
So track 9, Game Ain't Based on Sympathy. Produced by Bink with some co-production by the Youngstars. This is the best beat on the album, and it's really not even close.
I'm not mad at you saying
this
that.
Is completely ridiculous.
I'm not
this
mad at
is
you saying
nuts.
I'm not mad at you saying that.
Bink is out here showing off, and Ross is just skating all over the place.
Man,
I can listen to that saxophone all day.
That saxophone feels very Sade-ish.
It felt a little Cortex-ish to me.
Mm.
And I was trying. I've been trying to figure out what the sample is.
samples aren't out yet?
No.
Hold up.
Yeah. At least as of last night, they weren't.
Hold up. Yeah, I'm looking right now to see that.
People are like, oh, they're typing again.
Come on, man. They
got it.
Of course you did. Yeah, I figured it wouldn't take that long.
Yeah, they're up now.
Interesting.
Okay. Well,
never heard of that before in my life.
Nope, but guess what band I'm going to go look up tonight?
Right.
So, this beat is crazy. And you know what? It's 3 minutes and 44 seconds, which is perfect for this. There's 3 16-bar verses. That's it.
Here's the thing.
Don't do this.
I won't. Listen, I have slandered this man at length on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Jay should have been on this record.
Mm.
Jay would have obliterated that beat. That was perfect for him. And when I thought about that, the talk was that Jay was on the album.
Mm. You'd think one of these Bink songs, right? I mean, yep. Scientology is pretty short. It's only 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. Scientology.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let's continue. I want to play this sample really, really bad.
You want to hear what it is? Go ahead, play it.
Yeah, hold up. I'm a. All right, I think this is it. Yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
band is hilarious. Like the pictures of them, like in the slideshow.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not mad at you saying that, Doc. You will not hear any argument from me.
Oof.
That record is crazy.
Yeah.
That record is crazy.
That's an early favorite for Beat of the Year.
I'm not mad at that.
That's incredible.
See if that instrumental's on. See if I can find that.
You're like, wait, now that we got the sample, I just need a Doc to change the pitch a little bit. We can
back. Yeah, just a smidge.
Let's talk about Scientology.
This is a record that sequencing does not help.
Hmm. So produced by Bink. This beat is so over the top and ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
And you're right, because it comes right after Game 8 based on Sympathy, it's almost too much.
Yep.
This concept makes absolutely no sense to me. Like, this is such a the Scientology of hip hop. It's like, okay, just no. But it's also only 2.5 minutes, and the beat is so ridiculous and over the top. I'm in. It's fine. I'm in.
And that pocket that Ross hits.
Yeah.
Ross starts on 10. Like, he just goes. And then he doesn't break it up until he throws the shot at Birdman.
Mm.
And then he goes, you know, and just to regular Ross mode. But nah, I mean, yeah, that record is crazy, but it doesn't do any favors following Gaming based on Sympathy. But the record's dope, though.
Yeah, Bink is basically like putting out the bat signal, telling Jay it's time.
Absolutely.
This is advertising for future placement on a Jay-Z album.
Yeah, Blueprint 4 needs to have Bink on it.
Blueprint 4. I mean, sure, it'd be better than Magna Carta Holy Grail 2, which...
Oof. Don't ever say that again on this show. I'll never say that again.
I feel like I should, after that, it needs to be like one of those like really cheesy like 80s like subtitles afterwards, like this time it's personal.
Yeah. Or, yeah.
Back to church or something, you know, like
Vengeance is mine. So just something just really just no. Right. No.
This but. Time Jay-Z tis you know, whatever. Okay.
And this time
Let's talk about Lamborghini Doors featuring Meek Mill and Anthony Hamilton, which is just a hilarious combination of people to be on one song, especially when it's produced by Street Runner.
I was going to say, this was a record that you were looking forward to listening just for the concept and the track listing and all that. This did favors for you.
This is okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anthony Hamilton sounds completely out of place here.
I mean, who do you get on a record like this if you want somebody to sing? Who do you get? Chris Brown? Like
John Legend.
I don't need John Legend. No.
But that's right, John Legend. That's the idea.
He's going for the what are the name of those records that like older singers sing? Not ballads. What are they called, man? Whatever. He's going for like that Frank Sinatra audience.
Oh.
Isn't he? John Legend, he's absolutely going for like I want to be singing at the Oscars in 30 years.
I mean, that's kind of a smart move, right?
I'm not mad. I don't want him dancing around. I don't want him dancing around trying to be hip with the cool kids. You're married. You got a baby. Grow up. It is what it is.
So Lamborghini Doors.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
This is, meh.
I like the concept. I like the beginning. I like the story that it tells. And then from Meek to, you know, almost, you know, Ross couldn't get through to Gym Pop, da da da. And then Meek is like kind of in the back. The closer Ross gets, the more clear Meek's voice gets that he's rapping, you know, in general population with the other inmates and yada, yada, yada. Like, I like that. Hmm. I think that's dope. I think that adds some originality and some distinction to the song itself. But at the end of the day, yeah, I'm again coming after Gaming based on Sympathy. It's like I need a break.
Hmm.
I need a break. I didn't need a break. Well, yeah. No, you know what? The first time I heard Idols Become Rivals, you kind of need a break. Mm. I think for many of us, we heard it the day before the album came out. So we didn't hear it within this context. But if we would have heard Idols Become Rivals just listening to the album, not it's not labeled Birdman diss or anything that, like that.
That's how I heard it.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then, and then when Trap came on, I was like, no.
Yeah.
Get this out of here.
Yeah. But I imagine if we were hearing the album for the first time and heard that record, we would have been like, yo, I need a break. Yeah, go ahead and do the trap stuff because I need to collect my thoughts after what you just did. That's kind of how Game Ain't Based on Sympathy is. It's like, I need a break. Like, this record is like,
yeah,
wow. So that Scientology and Lamborghini Doors do not benefit.
Could have been a good point to put in Buy Back the Block.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Song people already know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. I agree.
All right. Triple Platinum featuring Skrilla, produced by the Olympics and Analogic.
Bruh.
How you feel about this?
This beat is crazy.
It's not over the top, but it really works. I like this beat.
But it's 6 minutes long.
It's really long. The concept here, simplistic, but Ross sticks to it. The contrast between him and Skrilla, what works, I get it. I'll say this. Nobody is better at making themselves sound richer or more important than they actually are than Rick Ross. Like, Rick Ross has never been anything approaching Triple Platinum, but that's not stopping him. You know what I mean? Like,
I need some water. Hold on. Please talk up and fill up what would be dead air.
Yeah.
Great job, Doc.
You know, and again, like, the concept with Skrilla is kind of a trope, but it works. And Skrilla doesn't embarrass himself on here. It's a good, like, the beat kind of does its job, gets out of the way, but is dope. Like, I'm not mad at the song, but it really could be 2 minutes shorter.
Yep, yep. Yeah, I mean, he's offbeat a little bit on there, but he sounds like, Skrilla sounds like Ross's boy that doesn't really rap.
Mm.
And Ross was just like, here, get on this record. Because Ross, I mean, God, Mass Pike Miles, like... But Gunplay was actually dope. I can't think of whoever else was in. What was the name of that group that Ross had?
Triple C's.
Yeah, I was about to call them the MMG Boys. So
MMG Boys. It's boys with a Z, isn't it?
Of course. So. Ross has shown that he likes putting his people on, which I respect. It's not one of those Deuce Poppy situations where, like,
oh no, everybody's getting this episode.
I'm hungry. I should have ate before the show. Yeah, it's not one of those Deuce Poppy things where, like, they're actually trying to push this person as an artist. Like, nobody wants a Skrilla project, but yeah, give him 16 to 24 bars on the album. That's fine.
Where's Gunplay?
I don't know, but Gunplay had two or three chances.
Yeah.
And just, man, they couldn't put it together. I think he went to jail as he was gaining momentum. It didn't work out for him, which is unfortunate.
Anything else you want to say about Triple Platinum?
Nah, we're good.
Okay. Maybach Music 5 featuring Dej Loaf.
Yes.
The singer on here is Cat Raquel, who's not really credited.
I heard she wrote on this. I'm sure she wrote that hook.
No, at least I don't think so.
Okay, she didn't write the hook.
Mm-hmm. produced by Beat Butcha and Buddha and Grands. So, first of all, is this the first Maybach Music that is not produced by Justice League?
Yes, and there's the first black eye.
Secondly, is Dej Loaf the, we'll say, lowest profile guest artist on a Maybach Music series?
I would say so, yeah.
Okay. Big expectations just based off the title alone.
Yes.
I'm not mad at the beat.
Me neither.
It's a smooth beat.
The beat is Maybach Music worthy to me.
Mm.
Just because even though it's very simplistic, it's still very lush and elegant. So it works. I think what doesn't help this song is not even that Dej Loaf is on it. The song actually isn't bad.
It's not bad. That's literally one of my bullets under my notes. Song isn't bad.
It's not bad. It's just Maybach Music 5. It's just the wrong title.
Right. It's long. It takes a long time for Rick Ross to get into this.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like the hook. I feel like it's a total missed opportunity to not bring in, even if you like pan it to one side, like the Biggie sample for I Swear to God, I Hope We Die Together. Like, That's a total missed opportunity. Would have contrasted nicely with this, with the girl singing that. You know, if you're gonna take this long to get Rick Ross on his own song, look, Dej wasn't bad, but it's gotta be more than that. You know, I mean, it's not a bad song. It's just, yeah, it doesn't live up to the title, and you know, you could chop a minute off this, and I feel like there's, I don't know, maybe give Dej like 8 bars. I don't know, something different, but like, I don't know, it was all right.
Yeah,
it's not terrible, but.
It's not. This is like another one. Mm. Like the record wasn't. It's like a better version. Where with another one, the record wasn't good, but people were treating it like it was absolute trash. Where this record is actually, it's straight, but people are treating it like it's like the worst song on the album. And you know, freaking the Gucci Mane song says hello. So. Yeah, but it's cool.
And then we end with Summer 17 featuring Yo Gotti, produced by Beat Billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
This is completely unnecessary, completely out of place, and should have been left off the album.
Okay.
How about you?
Yeah, geez. Honestly, out of all the trap songs on this album, this one bothers me the least.
Hmm.
I think the fact that it's out the way, it feels like movie credits.
I can see that. Yeah.
That like the end scene is Maybach Music 5. And then as the credits are rolling, I'm hearing Summer 17. It feels like a stripped down purple Lamborghini.
Mm.
It completely like Ross was like, oh, this might be another BM. Like deep down, Ross still wants to make another BMF. So he had some level of success with purple Lamborghini. And he's like, no, let's do that again. But let's make it for the streets. Because maybe the streets aren't listening to Skrillex. And maybe, because Purple Lamborghini sounds like how white people hear Rick Ross's music. Like, just very loud. Not you, Doc. You're good. Casual people who just know Rick Ross from BMF. Just imagine Ross's music to be very loud and very boisterous. And that is Purple Lamborghini. This is just like your typical standard Rick Ross trap song. But I'm not mad at it. It doesn't bother me the way that some of the other records, earlier records on this album bother me.
Okay. So 14 songs overall. How do you feel?
Man, I like it a lot, man. I think the people, I'll say this. I feel like the people who are saying this is Ross's best album in a long time need to go back and listen to Black Dollar again or Black Market again, because that album is really, really, really good.
Mm.
But this is where I want Ross. I don't want Ross chasing BMF. I understand that there are Ross people who like that trap sound, but Ross at 41, Ross almost dying, and he even references having seizures. And yeah, that line is so crazy. And he's had a seizure at the Super Bowl, woke up by the third quarter asking, where's the smoke or something like that. Like that line is so crazy. Ross, I've said at length that Ross is one of my favorite artists of this generation. And basically, this album confirms what I've been saying for the last 3-4 years, where I feel like his contribution to hip hop will be completely understated and unappreciated until much further along, when the quote unquote sting of he's a cop, if and when that ever, like, you know, rubs off or finishes. Because spoiler alert, most of your favorite rappers, especially the ones who get on the thug tip, they're not really as tough and as thuggish and as gangsta and whatever as they say they are. They want you to feel that way because you're not only buying their records, you're buying into their persona, just like you're buying into any other business. It just so happens that Rick Ross got exposed for his past. I could care less. I don't need Robert Englund to always be Freddy Krueger. It's cool. When he puts the mask on, he's in dreams killing people. That's fine. Ross is the same way. I don't need Ross. I need Ross to be Ross all the time for hilarious purposes, but I don't need him to like satisfy just this innate desire for me to be a gangster or a thug or for hip hop to be this one thing. Like, I just don't need it. So Ross as an artist, as an MC, as a rapper, at this point, you cannot discredit his ability to rhyme. And his ear for beats and his ability to put together cohesive projects. Hiccups aside, this album is really, really good and will probably be on my end of the year list.
I feel like you're slightly overrating it.
Yeah.
But I think the high points on here make us really sort of turn an eye to the fact that we didn't really love what Summer 17. Lamborghini Doors is cool. That whole three song sequence is meh. I mean, that's like, I'm at least a third of the album that we're just sort of going meh and tossing it aside. That being said, there's some ridiculous songs on here, but that to me is pretty indicative of what Rick Ross's output has always been, right? He, for whatever reason, he is sticking to this idea of he's going to have this mix of trying to recreate BMF and trying to do these lush tracks. And I kind of, you know, he's clearly not, I mean, at least to this point, he's not at the point where he thinks he needs to try to, okay, if he wants something to balance out those lush records, he's not going after a different kind of sound, right? Mm-hmm. He's sticking to that. So I think we're going to keep hearing that unless the trends change,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I think Ross will adapt. And he clearly knows how, because he, you know, it's funny, right? Like, if you would have told me in 2005 when...
Yes.
When his first single came out, if you would have told me that he would have cared as much about rapping as he clearly cares about rapping.
Yep.
I would have told you were crazy.
Yep.
So he'll figure it out, I feel like, if the trends change, but he's also clearly not trying to drive trends, which is weird because in a sense, that first MMG album solidified that Lex Luger sound was going to keep going and was going to build into something else.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of did help set a trend, but he's just, I don't think he has another move left in him, if that makes sense.
Sure. I agree with that.
Okay. And maybe that's a lot. That's a lot to ask.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. He was kind of like the figurehead of like that trap sound, honestly, on a commercial level.
Right. Between BMF and MC Hammer. And then that first MMG album, the first like six songs on there set the tone.
Yeah, that's Tupac. Oh my God, Tupac back. Yeah, that's Tupac back. That's dang, what else was on that album? Whatever. That's I'm a Boss. Cause I mean, even with Meek, yeah, go ahead and look that up. I appreciate that.
Like I hear you typing, Doc. Go ahead. So the first one is Self-Made.
Yep, remember that.
Right. Tupac back, produced by Mike Will, 600 Bends.
Oh, 600 Bends, yeah.
Produced by Cardiac. Pac-Man, Pill. Remember Pill? But wow. Yeah, like also on this is, oh, there's some dope records on here, like Pandemonium and Play Your Part.
That's your Play Your Part. That was your boy, right?
Yeah. Rise. Like, yeah, this is, what is Cardiac doing?
Isn't he on this album? Cardiac's on this album.
Game Ain't Based On? No, he's not. No, Rather You Than Me, Cardiac's not here.
Yeah, I thought he was.
Nah, I haven't seen Cardiac in a while. What's he up to?
I know he's produced stuff recently, though. I know I've seen his name somewhere.
I think the last time he popped up on something was J. Cole's album and Views. That's it. Yeah.
That was last year. What do you mean, where's Cardiac?
I mean, he did some additional production on one song on Views and some additional production on one song for J. Cole. That's pretty much all he did in 2016.
Oh.
That's all I mean.
Okay, I got you.
Doing as much, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, we'll be talking about another producer who disappeared.
And has... stunningly come back.
Yep.
Anything else you want to say about Rick Ross?
Nah. Other than, you know, if you're not a Ross fan, listen to Game Ain't Based on Sympathy, Idols Become Rivals, and Santorini, Greece. And if you don't like either of those records, Ross is just not for you. So all three of those records are fantastic.
Okay. And I mean, unless something drastic happens, I'm guessing that is the end of Side A for this week's episode. So, thank you.
Well, I'm sorry. Hold on.
Please, go ahead.
I'm sorry. He's actually projected to do 100K this week.
That's actually pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Especially considering who he's in the shadow of this week.
Yep.
Which we're going to talk about on Side B of this week's episode of Clack Radio Speakers. So thank you everybody for listening to Side A. Side B, obviously, we're going to talk about Drake's More Life.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clackradiospeakers.com.